Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey there, welcome along. It's Aaron Noonan here, the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol in 2024. Great to have you join me for another chit-chat with, well, someone who's done a fair bit in Australian motor racing. I recently sat down with five-time Bathurst 1000 winner and Australian Formula 4 champ and Bathurst 24-hour winner and Sandown 500 winner and, well, yeah, you get the drift, Garth Tander. This is part two of our wide-ranging chat. If you haven't heard part one, go and have a listen, because there's some great stories in that as well. We left the chat in part one, partway through talking about Garth's time in Formula Ford. So let's pick it up talking about his rivalry with a guy who would later go on to become a two-time V8 supercar champion in Marcus Ambrose. Now, I'm not going to give you a long intro to this one, because I know you're champing at the bit for some more GT action. So enjoy this. It's Garth Tander on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol. Were there any times that you and Marcus went head-to-head that year in races? Did it ever get testy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you two were the two to beat that year.
Yeah, yeah. It turned out pretty early that it was going to be Marcus and I. And I remember we were at Phillip Island, which I reckon was round
two or three. Calder was round one.
I reckon it was round three. I reckon it was Calder, we did the AGP, and we did Sandown, and then we did Phillip Island. And the must have been the last race. I reckon it was the last race. I don't remember the circumstances leading to it, but Marcus and I are going down the front straight, and I can't remember who was on the inside, who was on the outside. So let's just say we were going down the front straight. We went into turn one, and Formula Ford back those days was basically flat through turn one, 230k an hour, whatever it might be. So we went down front straight side by side, we went into turn one, and then we didn't come out of turn one. So there's a couple of young guys being buff heads that wouldn't give in, and we crashed, right? So we crashed, typical Formula Ford crash. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. And there's finger pointing and all the rest of it. Anyway, they load us back up. They load us up. We did both DNF. We load us up on the flat tray. And we're both on the same flat tray because Formula Ford's aren't that big.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're sitting in your car with your foot on the brake so that the car doesn't move. They take you back to the scrutineering bay, unload you. Your team come and gets you, load it in your truck and you go home. So I remember we're on the truck heading back to and neither of us are looking at each other. Neither of us are happy with each other, which, you know.
Standard.
And we get back there and Ross Ambrose and my old man are standing next to each other, looking at both of us going, you pair of dickheads. You are leading by the proverbial country mile, and between the two of you, you couldn't work it out. You're a pair of, like, literally cops.
So the dads were united.
No, dads were united in like, giving us the full primary school dressing down, a pair of absolute boneheads. So that one stands out to me that, yeah, Marcus and I. And yeah, look, I think we, from that point on, we raced pretty hard, but pretty fair. Like, we, you know, Formula Ford, for those that followed it, particularly through that period, it was pretty cutthroat. But from that point on, we didn't really get into it too much. It was pretty hard, but pretty fair.
Mm-hmm. There was no big obvious. Because those races back in the day weren't part of telecast. They did turn those around, I think.
Yeah,
they occasionally they might sneak into one.
Yeah,
but they made a post show out of some of them.
Most of them are post show. I think one race might have ended up live. One race per weekend might have ended up live.
Yeah,
but anyway, you definitely had the trackside thing going.
Oh no, trackside was a couple of years later.
Well, there was something going.
Yeah, I think what they ended up doing and did.
No, it wasn't. That was the first year of 10 Noons.
It was the first year of 10, but trackside didn't start until 99.
Oh, there was something. There was some turnaround.
Yeah, I think they made some post produced shows out of Formula 4. And Formula Holden.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So people did get to see what was going on, but in those days you had to wait a week or maybe
two. Yeah, but I do remember there are on YouTube, there are
some floating
that are of that year that were live in the broadcast.
Yeah.
Because Diff and Osler and all those guys were calling.
Barry Sheen and all that stuff. Did you go New Zealand Formula 4 racing?
Was 96.
It the end of the previous
year? End of 96. So, again, I was working for Fastlane. And one of our so the old story that you can race Formula Ford in New Zealand much younger than you can in Australia. So one of our customers, Christian Murchison, went to New Zealand in the summer of 96 for their summer series to race over there prior to doing the WA State Series in 97 and then the National Formula Ford Series in 98 in Australia. So he just went to New Zealand to do some racing early. And Mercho couldn't do two races over there for some reason. And they were already racing on the new Avon tyre in New Zealand, which was the tyre that was coming to Australia in 97.
So
Brett's like, well, we're going to take Garth over and he's going to do the two races in New Zealand. One, to fulfill these two races that Mercho can't go to, but two, because it gives him some miles on the tyre that we're going to race on in Australia in 97. So off we go to New Zealand, and I did Pukekohe, which was the Nissan Mobile V8 weekend. So that's when they shipped over
12 cars
or whatever it might have been.
Yeah.
So they're doing that demo race. And so I was racing Formula Ford that weekend. And then I raced down at Ruapuna in Christchurch. A couple of weeks later. So I stayed in New Zealand the whole time. So that was cool. That was cool. I raced against, I can't remember who they all were except for one bloke that turned out to go okay. His name was Scott Dixon.
Okay-ish. Yeah. I mean, you know, how many baths?
Whenever I see Scott or I message him every now and then, I do remind him that I did four races in New Zealand Formula Ford and I won three of them and he won one. But he's probably got a few other races on his CV since then.
Yeah, he's done some other stuff along the way.
Hey, but you can only beat him in the races that you're in together.
Correct.
And that's
exactly right. Yeah. And you're 75% win rate, so you're all good. You're all good. Gary Rogers era, we've sort of covered the end of it. We covered a little bit of it in our last chat, but because it wasn't a factory involvement, I mean, they were Holden back. The Monaro program was a heavy Holden motorsport project. We spent some time together at last year's Bathurst 12-hour with some guests at our open night at the National Motor Racing Museum, and you're in fine form with some great stories. Can you regale the one for our listeners here about your little, and I know you have probably talked about this in a few other spots, your failure to make a good impression on your new team by sleeping in?
Oh, that was like day one of employment.
Good time to start.
Day one of not even employment. I wasn't employed even at that stage. I was having a test to see whether they would employ me. So
and this is early 98.
This is
you've been mechanicking for Tim Lay, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, I won the Formula Ford Championship in 97. Couldn't put the budget together to do Formula Holden in 98. Bunnings were happy with the amount of money that they were spending to do Formula Ford, but didn't want to commit to spending more.
And you couldn't go back.
I couldn't,
as the reigning Formula Ford.
You weren't allowed to race Formula Ford as the reigning Formula Ford champion. So there was no Carrera Cup, there was no Dunlop Series, there was no nothing. It was basically Formula Ford, Formula Holden, supercars. So couldn't raise the budget to go to Formula Holden. I was just working full time as a mechanic, and yes, I was working on Tim Lay's car.
Who we must get on the podcast.
If you want, and like Tim is a used car salesman from Orange. So if you want to waste an hour and a half of your life hearing really bad jokes and really long stories, then yes, get Tim Lay on your podcast.
That's a two-parter for sure.
Yeah, it will be a two-parter. didn't know it at the time, but scored a lifelong friend in Tim there working for him. But the story goes, Stephen Richards leaves GRM to take up a role at Nissan Motorsport in the UK. This is when the British Touring Car Championship's in its full swing. Manufacturers are spending trillions of dollars in the British Touring Car Championship. Richo goes over as a factory test driver with a view to getting some races and leaves a void at GRM. GRM, through with Valvoline, had been sponsoring Formula Fords over the journey, and they sponsored Marcus the year prior, who I beat to the Formula Ford Championship. Marcus was in the UK racing the British Formula Ford Championship, mm-hmm. so yep. already had that deal going. So Gary knew of me because I'd beaten the Valvoline. Beaten the Valvoline Formula Ford. So the story actually went that Mike XL, who was the engine builder at GRM, rang me out of the blue. I didn't know Mike at all. Rang me and goes, you don't know who I am. My name's Mike XL. I work at Garage Motorsport, blah, blah, blah. Steve Richards has left. We're looking at potential options for other drivers. Some of the names that Gary has suggested, I don't really care for. And I've,
engine blokes are a breed to themselves.
And look, I won't use the actual words that he used, but I'd like your name to be in the mix. Here's Gary's number. Give him a call. So that's what I did. So I didn't even know what Gary Rogers looked like. I knew of him, but I didn't know what he looked like. So I got his number. It was an 018 number back in those days. Rang him. Gary, this is on a Thursday afternoon. I remember where I was standing. I was standing in the sheds at Wanneroo Raceway working on a Formula Ford. So I was just standing outside the sheds. Rang him. Gary, this is Garth Tander. I'm not sure if you know who I am. And before I'd even finished the sentence, yes, I know who you are. Gary being Gary, very to the point. I said, oh, look, Gary, I heard there's might be an opportunity within your race team. I'd just love to put my name forward if you'd consider, you know, giving me a crack. He goes, yes, I know who you are. I'll call you back.
That is very Gary.
And that was it.
That's very Gary.
And I was like, well, that's that then. I'll be working on this Formula Ford for a bit longer.
Back to the spanners
and away we went. And this is on a Thursday afternoon. He rang me that Friday, the next day, and said, we're testing next Tuesday. I'll fly you over on Monday. You can test on Tuesday and we'll go from there. And I was like, okay, righto.
This is further ahead than we were before. So
this is okay. So I flew over on the Monday, and then the Formula Ford team, by this stage, had a base at Essendon Airport. So we had a truck and we had the car base, the truck based at Essendon Airport. We had a little workshop there. And some of the team were over there. They were testing at Phillip Island that week. So I went to dinner on the Monday night, flew into Melbourne, went to dinner with the Formula Ford team, and I didn't know anyone else in Melbourne, didn't know anyone at GRM. So I was like, oh, well, I'll stay with the Formula Ford team in Essendon, and then Sherl, Kevin Sawyer, and Mike XL will pick me up at Essendon on the way to Winton to go do the test.
Which is, by the way, on the Tuesday. A very logical plan.
It works logistically. Those are, you know, the layout of Melbourne, it all works. Yep. So I was like, okay, so I go and have dinner at a pub in Essendon with the Formula Ford team, and Sherl rings me. Sherl, who was the team manager.
And he was called Sherl because of Shirley Strawn.
Yeah. I didn't really know for a very long time while he was called Sherl, but for Shirley Strawn.
Because everyone at GRM
had a nickname. So anyway, Sherl rings me, and I'm at the pub having dinner, and I'm not drinking. I'm having lemonade and I'm having a chicken parmigiana.
Nothing wrong with a chicken parmigiana.
So anyway, and it's a bit noisy because it's a pub. And so Sherl goes, I'm just ringing to make sure you're right. I'll pick you up in the morning, 6:30, whatever it was. I was like, yeah, all good, no worries. He goes, where are you? Oh, I said, look, I'm at the pub. I'm clearly not drinking. I'm ready to go for tomorrow, but, you know, just with the Formula Ford team, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yep, okay, no worries. So go to bed. And this is before iPhones and all the rest of it. So I set the alarm on the hotel alarm clock, and clearly I made an error in setting the alarm clock. Probably did the old AM PM thing.
Probably or and, definitely.
Slept in on my very first day. So I awake to the front door at the hotel. Oh, shit. Answer the door. not shaved, not showered, not dressed. Give me 5 minutes. Shower, shave, dressed, out the door, ready to go. That's the first impression of Garth Tander at GRM.
And you got the drive.
Yeah, so luckily I could drive because the test went okay. So this is on a Tuesday. Had a meeting with Gary on the Wednesday at Glen Waverley. How do you think all that went? I said, oh, yeah, I thought it went pretty well. And lap times wise, Bargs was there in the other car. I got to win, I think, half a second of Bargs on my first day. And Gary's like, yep, thought it went pretty well. How do you feel about racing at Phillip Island this weekend? So, you were? He goes, yep, well, we're racing this weekend. We need a driver. Do you want to drive? I was like, yes. So, this is on a Wednesday. So, I'd gone from standing out the front of the sheds at Wanneroo Raceway working on a Formula Ford the previous Thursday to less than 10 days later lining up on the grid at Phillip Island qualifying 16th next to Dick Johnson.
Not bad.
That's probably the definition of it all happening pretty quickly.
Just a bit. And the start of a seven-year period there that brought a Bathurst win and plenty of wins and you really got up and rolling there. But that period too at GRM, that's where the grid what shall we say, the outfit started. Gary started having all sorts of stuff on the grid. Yeah. There was Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. There was fake horses. There was all – I mean, people thought the Volvo stuff later on with the saunas. Yeah, no,
that was lightweight.
This was well before that. Was there ever a time that you pulled up on the grid
and
saw this – what is burnt in your brain with some of that stuff from back in the late 90s, early noughties?
It's probably not politically correct to say, but I genuinely thought at one stage Gary was a cross-dresser. He would be some of the outfits, like Coco Cabana outfits, like dresses. He'd wear the Lycra, you know, back in the day.
He had the grid girls.
Back in the day, so grid girls were a thing, and that's what you did in that period. And I pulled up on the grid, and I'm like, what? What's that? And it was Gary in the Lycra. And I actually then, and this is like not about mid-99 it really started. It definitely didn't start in 98 because I was...
You would have probably been too scared.
Whoa, I was pretty young. I was pretty young. But by 99, I'd sort of obviously got my feet under the desk a little bit and probably a bit more confident. So I actually, after I turned up on the grid and Gary's there in the Lycra and carrying on like a pork chop, I actually said to him, said, Gaz, it's clearly your show and you can do whatever you want, but please just warn me what you're going to do. So when I roll up to the grid, I know what to expect. So from that point on, I had at least had a preview or a warning of what was going to be going on. But yeah, he had a lot of fun. And look, we probably, you know, back then it was very much the HRT, Dick Johnson Racing, Glenn Seaton Racing, Castrol Perkins show. And Gary Rogers Motorsport and the Valvoline team were emerging, but we weren't the stars of the show. So we weren't getting the TV time that the big four were getting. Mm. So Gary's devised that the best way to get some attention was to stand out from the crowd. And in very unique Gary Rogers way, he found a way to stand out from the crowd.
And standing out of the crowd did it, but then also the results started to fly.
While Gary was focusing on what outfit he was going to wear on the grid the next day, we were sort of focusing on making the cars go as fast as we could.
It worked.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
I had a bit of a rifle back through our records because there's some stuff that I needed to remind myself about. And for a first win for any driver in their supercar career, whatever your category is or your chosen place, is special and important. But yours was sort of a weirdly mired one, and we'll paint the picture. So in 98, you get the chance at Phillip Island. You stay on for the year. 99 flows. Bugs has got the new VT. You're still in the VS, which was the XHRT car.
Yep.
Queensland Raceway debuts on the calendar
with
a sprint round, which was well attended. Track
too well
great
attended.
Tires. Couldn't get in, couldn't get out.
I think Larko at some point had to actually hail down a passing copper and get him to get him out of the traffic. I think from memory,
we might have even bailed on the rental car and ran in as well.
The traffic management plan for that first round wasn't flash. But anyway, so this was a really odd. So back in the days of the round result, most points on the day wins. So John Bowes driving for Cat Racing.
Yep.
He wins the last race, but he's found guilty of passing you, I think, under a yellow
flag. Yeah, he passed me under yellow into the last corner.
So we have this situation where you've won the round.
Well, he even crossed the line first.
He pressed on.
He got a black flag.
He ignored the black flag.
He got a black flag, and back in the day, you had three laps to...
And he didn't do it.
And he passed the black flag more than... The rule was if you passed it on, they passed it a third time, they effectively stopped scoring you.
Yeah.
So JB crossed the line first, but he wasn't scored, so I won the race. So
See, there's the thing. Yeah. So on the day, he was excluded from winning the race.
That's right. At the time,
I was appealed, and actually in the history books, he got the race win
I don't know how. I honestly don't know
I still don't know how. But so, yeah, just this weird thing of history.
There was this period of my career where nothing was sort of...
Simple. Wasn't there an Adelaide where you got
2000 in Adelaide?
No,
2000 at Adelaide. I didn't win either race, but I won overall.
That's right.
But that's the only year where they awarded it on overall points.
And it's in the subregs for anyone who wants to
find me on. Yeah, so Scafie and I still argue over that one because he won the Sunday, but I won overall. But I've got the trophy, so MS. Mm-hmm. I'm the winner, which we still argue about now, today, in the commentary box.
I know.
So that one, I remember it was the last corner, turn six, Queensland Raceway. JB qualified on pole for that one for the weekend. It was new surface. He had the Demon one lap set up in the car. I think he qualified on pole by 8/10 or something.
He got a huge margin.
Yeah, yeah. And then engaged reverse gear in the first race and just blew the tires off the thing. My car was really good on the tires, so I was leading the last race. But yeah, starting to suffer with tyre wear in the last half of the last 20 lap sprint race. So JB did a great job, turned his car around and turned his car from a tyre reader into the big tyre conservation car and was coming on strong. But yellow flags at the last corner. So I'm like, well, I don't need to defend at the last corner because it's yellow flags. So anyway, JB just goes smoking on through, passes under yellow, clear as day, gets black flagged. So I'm like, oh, well, don't have to worry about him. I've won the race. And on Sunday afternoon, I had won the race, but somehow, and I still don't know to this day, he got reinstated as a race winner. So I still won the round, even with him getting those points back. I still won the round, but I didn't cross the line first, but I did cross the line first, but then I wasn't first. So thankfully, rectified that at the very next round at Calder. Which still wasn't straightforward because that was the year that Lowndes had the world's biggest crash and rolled the thing over and we all went and ran over and got him out. And then that was the second race of the weekend. And then for the third race, my car was still pretty bent up and then it blew the exhaust. It broke a header. So it sounded like an old Massey Ferguson tractor. Mark Scaife was all over my rear bumper. But I did cross the line first. And there was no penalties, and I did win the race.
And it is in the record book still. Yes. It hasn't been removed, changed, modified.
Not yet. There's still time. I'm sure there's still time.
I think
the statute of limitations are on race wins.
I think you're good. I think you're good. One of the things that I've learned over the years of working in this industry and having got to know and interacted a lot and worked with guys like yourself in various roles over the years, race drivers have memories like elephants. Mm,
for some things. The good stuff, not the bad stuff.
Usually how many wins you've got, your lap times at certain tracks in certain cars, set up things and stuff. You're trying to look at my sheet here.
No, I'll stop looking.
Do you remember, and I think you will because race drivers don't like opening wallets like the rest of us, do you remember your biggest fines? Your top three fines from over the years. This is part of our V8 Sleuth. I don't have a segment sponsor for this, but maybe we should in future. I want to see if you can give me what were your three biggest fines of your supercars/V8 supercars career.
I feel like there was a 10 grander in there.
Mm.
Was there?
Mm. Where and when?
Oh, no, there was a period there where I basically paid for the CAMS, what's now Motorsport Australia, was CAMS. I must have paid for 4 or 5 Christmas parties.
So there was a 10 grander in there.
Ah, okay. So if I paint the picture, can you give me the story? 2011 Perth, home soil. You find $10,000.
Was it passing under red or something?
No, no. 8,000 of which was suspended until the end of the year. So really, it's only a
two. It was a 2 grander.
For using indecent language in a radio transmission broadcast on television.
Really?
So it's 10, but it was really you paid 2.
That's 2. Well, that's a bit ticky-tack, isn't
and
it?
In any of these, does the team ever offer to help
no.
out? No. All out of your wallet?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still stinging, isn't it?
Yeah. No, there was a couple there I paid out 5. I know, I definitely paid 5.
There's a 5 for a slowdown lap incident.
Yeah, that was passing under. Was it passing under red? Oh, no.
No, this was on the slowdown lap at a race.
And a race. Oh, yeah. After a race. What was that for?
Albert Park, 2006. Oh, you and Todd Kelly got into a bit of a...
There was one with Todd.
What was the go there?
I can't remember, but I can't remember what it was for. It was clearly something...
Careless driving post-race on the slowdown lap involving Todd Kelly.
It was clearly something...
He must have swerved out.
Something happened during the race that Todd and I didn't agree on, so I took it on after the race, which... Kids, please don't do that.
No, keep your 5.
No doubt I would have hit Todd on the cool-down lap. Cut through it all. That's probably what happened.
Got to it. And Gold Coast 1998 came up in our system.
Yeah. I remember that one.
What was this one?
I just barreled into turn one and crashed into a few, and that was a full bonehead move. So
3 grand.
Was it only 3?
At the first chicane. Later suspended, because this was at a time when judiciary was probably out of control. Later suspended pending another hearing. Second hearing saw you fine $5,000.
Yeah, I reckon.
And then a third hearing saw you lose your appeal and the fine stood. So I think that ended up at 5.
5. And that one stung, man. That stung.
In 98, your first year in.
I mean, I was on like proper apprentice wages. That one stung.
That's a lot of weeks.
That's a lot of weeks of working in spare parts department at Gary Rogers Nissan, that one.
Which is what you do.
That's what I was doing.
What was the go-to spare part that everyone needed for their Nissan?
I was very good at the N15 Nissan Pulsar parts line. It was 15208So N15, 1.5, 208 was the model designation. So anything, if those of you that have an N15 Nissan Pulsar, all of the parts on your car have a parts designation 15208 something else. Then there was another 5 numbers after it.
The things that stick in your brain from...
Hey, man, I got to the point at the spare parts department that they used to get the shits on when I used to leave for race meetings because less would get done in spare parts. So I had to remind them I was actually employed to drive the race car and I'd just fill in at spare parts.
That was the bonus extra
so
for them.
Thankfully, I think it was the end of 99, the guys from Valvoline actually said to Gary, so it's probably time that you let Bargs and Garth be race car drivers now.
Full time.
I spent more than 18 months working in spares at GRM. So
it's always been the deal with Gary's place. If you don't just turn up and be the driver.
But
later on
I
down the track,
like
it did change.
It did change, but I feel like Bargs worked in service and he was meant to be some sort of service advisor, which all I ever see was him walking around with a coffee. Before me, Steve Richards worked in the race team, working on the race cars, which I would have happily done. After me, there was all these guys. They all worked in the race team. So I feel like I was the only one over the journey that actually worked properly within the business doing something. you hear from Caruso or Holdsworth or even McLaughlin, who was meant to be an apprentice fabricator. They just sort of went in, did a couple of hours work and bummed around the workshop.
You'd paved the way. You had snowplowed all the
I feel like I did
way.
The heavy lifting for those that came after me.
They got it easy.
Anyway.
Good. When we got together last 5 years ago, we did discuss the approach that you had when you were getting to the latter part of your GRM time. Team Dynamic came calling and were sniffing around. There was a chat with Dick Johnson Racing as well. Was the dude somewhere in among all this? Paul Morris Motorsport. I don't think we talked about that.
Went and had a tour at the dudes. So this was all end of 2004 going into 2005.
Okay.
So the pre-dealer team.
Yep.
So I told Team Dynamic came knocking end of...
03?
I feel like it was before.
Because GRM, your last year was 04.
Last year, 04 was GRM. So I reckon Team Dynamic came the summer of 2002, 2003. And it was full, get the legals involved, look at the contracts. Because I'd sort of pretty much made my mind up at that stage that I needed to go somewhere else. Like, I'd been at GRM by that stage, even at the end of 02, five years.
Yeah.
And I felt like for me to develop as a race car driver, I had to go and work with some different people. So Oscar was at Team Dynamic. He came knocking with Kieran Wills, who would own the team. We got the lawyers out and went through the contracts and all the rest of it, and ultimately couldn't get out of it, and I didn't feel that it was the right way to do it at that stage. So didn't do that. And so my contract, that current contract, was up at the end of 04. So I told Gary, it was very early in 04. I feel like it was like March or April that this was it. I wasn't going to, you know, if there was a contract to be offered post 2004, that I was going to go somewhere else. But there was no deal in place to go anywhere else at that stage. So Simon McNamara, who was at Holden Motorsport at that stage, he obviously tried to re-engage through the Dynamic thing, but I think Dynamic had a few troubles by that stage. I
think they might have been a woomer by that
stage.
Yeah,
I think they'd done a bit of running that they probably shouldn't have. But the dudes went up to Paul Morris's and had a look at the race team and their infrastructure and what might be the go there. Definitely went to DJR and had another look there. But Holden were working really hard, you know, with Simon at that stage to do what they could, and then obviously the what was going to be the Kmart Racing thing came up, which I think came up in about June or July. Murph wanted a change of scenery. I think Keys had got the checkbook out and gone shopping with Murph, which opened a door for me at Kmart Racing. We did that deal pretty quickly.
Mm. Which we did cover off a fair bit on the last chat, that period then that led to Clayton Walkinshaw's HSV, HRT, and when that era finally did wrap up. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out. Mate, we've covered a heap of stuff, but I wanted to just fast forward into another couple of little things here. We're going to see Shane Van Gisbergen in NASCAR this year, which is, as race fans that we are at our core, is really exciting.
Yep.
You've worked up close with him for some time. You got to know him more than you would have known him before you were at 888. What did you see and what do you know about him now that when you look at what he's about to set out and do, and by the time we run this pod, he would have started on his mission. What strengths does he have that will help him? What are going to be his hurdles? What's your feeling on this whole scenario?
Look, it's hard to speak on his behalf, and I sort of won't. But what I observed of Shane in the time that I was able to work closely with him was his capacity to drive the race car at its limit, but have this ability to be able to process other things, peripheral things, whether it be strategy, whether it be what other people are doing.
Racing brain is
probably if you think about his ability to operate like a computer. So a computer needs so much computing power to be on and to be doing things, and your computer is always doing something in the background. For Shane, the driving the race car bit is the in the background bit. It takes up 10% of his CPU. So he's got this amazing capacity to be able to drive the race car faster than the majority of us, using only 10% of his ability or with computing power, to then be able to think about all this other wondrous stuff, to be able to manage the tire, to be able to manage the pit stops, to be able to manage his strategy, to be able to manage probably the three or four other cars that he's racing, their strategy. He's got this amazing capacity to be able to do that. And it's hard to sort of convey that to punters and to people at home just how amazing that is, because anyone that races in supercars can drive a race car fast. The difference is how much of your capacity it takes up, how much of your brain capacity it takes up. And I feel like in, you know, parts of my career where I was really driving the best, it would still probably take 50 to 60% of my computing capacity to drive the race car fast. But then I still had some ability to be able to think of the peripheral things. For Shane, that number is much, much lower. And that's what makes him stand out. So that's why he's so good in changeable conditions. That's why he's so good at thinking on the run. That's why it's, you know, he has this ability to create a result out of nothing, because he's probably ran three or four different scenarios through his head before he's actually even talked to the team about it from a strategy point of view on the radio through the race. Mm. So that's what for me stands out. And that's what'll stand him in good stead. I mean, that's why when we're all sitting at home watching him in Chicago in that cup race going, he's going to win it. Mm. Like,
they don't know it yet.
They don't know it. And he's down in 18th because the pit stop cycle didn't work, but he's going to win it. And there was probably, you know, realistically 10 of us that were texting each other going, yeah, this is going to happen.
Lock it in. Put the name on the trophy.
The Americans didn't know it. And I spoke to Andrew Edwards when he got back and he knew it.
Yeah.
And he told them that. And they were like, you're crazy, man. Yeah, how do you know that's going to happen? And, you know, it happened. So yeah, look, that's not saying that every cup race is going to do on a street course, he's going to win. But if the planets align, then there's a good chance that he's going to go well.
You talked about when your CPU was operating at its best. When was that?
Oh,
when you look back on that?
Probably 06, 07, 08, through that period. That's when I felt like it was it came to me the easiest. The speed came to me the easiest. We had good cars and good teams and good organizations. And I felt like in that period, from a consistently delivering performance as an athlete, that period was probably it. That's not to say that I didn't feel like I wasn't fast at any other stage of my career, but I feel like, you know, if you want to look back at your career and go, when was your real purple patch? It was probably through then.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. These days you're driving a microphone with supercars more often than not when you're at a supercars round, apart from the enduros, obviously. Mm-hmm. You've had a bit of a crack at just about all of it now. I mean, we see you mainly in the pit lane, but we see you on a host desk. We've heard you in the commentary box with supports and a bit of main game here along the way. Where do you feel most comfortable?
Calling. I really enjoy calling, which surprises me because I...
Doesn't surprise me, though.
Doesn't... there was certainly no grand plan that I would end up in that world. I enjoy all of it. I really do. I really enjoy all of it. I enjoy, you know, we do pieces out on the track. Actually, you know, they come to me, I'll go and stand at, you know, where are we going? We're going to Bathurst next for the first round of the championship. For me, the critical part of the first lap at Bathurst for these 250K races we go there is the braking zone at turn two on lap one. So I'll likely go... Before the race, I'll be standing on the track at the braking zone at turn two, and Jess will cross to me and I'll talk about what's important about and why it's important. And I really enjoy that side of it because that's a story that I can tell from experience and a picture that I can paint before the race gets started. So I enjoy that part of it. But I enjoy calling. I particularly the Super 2 races.
Well, there's a little bit to call.
There's not a lot of dull moments in Super 2. So Chad and I get to be pretty busy through those 40-minute affairs. And yeah, look, I've been fortunate also to have been able to call some of the main game stuff so early in my TV life. So yeah, I enjoy the calling. I enjoy all of it. I feel really, really fortunate to be able to tell the story that is supercars, having been part of the pit lane for 25 years now. I mean, it's not like AFL where there's 250 media jobs in AFL post playing career. There's probably four.
Yeah, pretty much.
In TV world. Yeah, yeah. So to have one of those, I'm incredibly fortunate.
What element of it all have you had to really work at? I think there are some sportsmen in other sports and in motor racing that move into broadcasting, television, who probably don't put the work in or thought it would come a bit easier. What's the bit that you've had to really work at? Because you didn't come into this era of your motorsport life having not done it. You know, we used to do support category stuff together many moons ago. It's scary how many moons ago. So it's not your first rodeo with this stuff.
But yeah.
What have you had to actively really work on to that you weren't happy with yourself, or that you've watched others do and you went, geez, I can't quite do that yet? Or what have you put your real focus into to try to lift that part of your game?
It's the live pit lane stuff, like in race in particular. It's still not a challenge, but it's still the bit that I feel like I can be better at. So, you know, sniffing out stories. And look, I've got to be a little bit careful because I am still an active driver and I do have an association with one of the teams in pit lane. So I don't go in there looking for the story that Blanchard Racing Team have gone from a 425 rear spring to a 450 rear spring and it's going to do this, because I'm not going to give away any of that, and I'm not going to go into a race team and ask them that, because I don't feel that's fair on them for me to have that information. And let's be honest, they're not going to tell me anyway. But I feel like that, just finding the right stories and conveying those stories in the races particularly has been the bit that I struggled to get comfortable with, probably because I have had, you know, initially the association with Triple Eight and now with Grove whilst I'm doing the TV stuff. All the teams up and down pit lane have been fantastic with me, 100% fantastic. I can walk into any garage at any stage of any weekend, and at no stage do they give me the side eye or they tell me to piss off or any of that. All the teams have been fantastic. So to have that professional respect both ways, I've found really, really welcoming. But yeah, it's just the pit lane stuff. Initially, it was I found the most challenging, but I feel comfortable with it now. What I've had to really work at, I was actually doing way too much prep. I was doing too much research, and my head was full of everything. And when your head's full of everything, you try and get it all out of your head, and then you end up mumbling or tripping over your words, or trying to use every little stat that Aaron Noonan has prepared for you before the event. So you end up not delivering a clear message. So I actually knocked a lot of the prep back because I had too much in my head.
But it makes you – it's funny. I used to overprep because it made me feel ready.
Yeah.
But you got to the end of the weekend and went, shit, I'm not going to use 5% of all this.
I didn't use 90% of the prep that I did, and I filled my head with a heap of stuff that I didn't need.
Yeah.
So I, initially for the first 18 months, I felt I was probably over-prepping. So now just narrowing down on what the important things are for important parts of the weekend, I've learnt to do. I treat it very much like an athlete or a race car driver. I have a huge amount of self-analysis about how I performed on TV, how I can be better, what I could have done better. Like if I trip on a word, I get down on myself and I'll go, you know.
It's the miss gear change equivalent.
Yeah, it is. It is really equivalently missing a gear, and 99% of the people wouldn't even know you did it, but I know I did it. So I want to be better at it. And like I'll go back to the desk and after we've been on air, I say, oh, sorry, Jess, or sorry, Mark, or sorry, Neil. And Jess in particular is going, what are you sorry for? And didn't even notice it. So I set pretty high standards for myself.
Mate, it's been great to sit down and do this again. We've covered a fair bit more ground than we there's still plenty that we haven't really covered off. So we'll get you back to be full veteran spec
time down the track. Probably another 5 or 6 years.
You know, another couple of Bathurst wins. Awesome. And, we'll just lock it
Thanks,
in.
Thanks, Noons.
Thank you, Gar. Much appreciated. And all the best for the rest of the year.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
So good to catch up with Garth Tander. He's always got an opinion. He's always got a great story. He was kind enough to show me around the remodeled Grove Racing Workshop. It's a lot different to how it was last time I was there when it was Kelly Racing, which I think is about 5 years ago or so.
That's for sure. A big thank you to the five-time Bathurst 1000 winner for the sit-down. They are always insightful, entertaining, and informative chats with Garth, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. But can you hear something? I think I hear you asking a question. Nudes, who's your next guest on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Castrol? Well, that's a really good question, and one I've got an answer to. My next guest on the next episode is a guy who grew up as a gopher for Colin Bond's team. He went all the way through rallying to the top of the WRC with ProDrive and Subaru, and he's been part of the Supercars paddock as an engineer for a range of teams for two decades. Phil Key is my next guest on the pod. Part one of that chat drops next week with a guy who's got plenty of stories from home and abroad. I hope you can join me for that one. That is next time. I'm Aaron Noonan. Thanks for tuning in. Send us your feedback via the form on our V8 Sleuth website. And I'll chat with you next time on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Castrol.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.